Hello, Nutcracker Syndrome podcast listeners. It's me, Simone. I'm back. It's been a bit of a hiatus. No more FMLA. Full steam ahead with work since my auto transplant. Gosh, what are we? 10, a little bit more like 10 months and a week out from my auto transplant on December 19th, 2024. A little bit of an update, and then I want to transition into something all of us hate. Okay, so love that for us. A bit of an update. I'm doing amazing. I actually was in the ER 2 weeks ago, which womp womp, sad. I know I'm okay. But as we all know, we go to the ER and they're like, everything's normal. And it's just the gaslighting just keeps going. The reason why I went in is because it was what I thought. I thought it was an ovarian cyst. So as a reminder, no uterus. I don't have a left ovary. I lost that bitch to my nutcracker syndrome. I only have my right ovary, but they obviously did a traditional auto transplant, which means my left ovary is now in my lower right pelvic region. So we have the appendix, the right ovary, and the now lower right kidney, I guess. All, jammed up, living in one bedroom apartments in New York City, basically. And so I had one day a couple weeks ago, prior to us traveling to Montreal, I was just sitting here working, and all of a sudden it was very, I've lost count of the amount of ovarian cysts I've had rupture. It was very similar to that. It was like I felt this pop in my lower right pelvic region near the ovary. And I was like, oh, no. And then the storm of symptoms after that came, like I needed to rush to the restroom. I started having lower abdomen, like deep burning pain in my pelvis. I ended up going to the ER because I'm like, okay, this could be an ovarian cyst. However, I don't know. The kidney's down there. And, what if it is the kidney? What if I'm sitting here thinking, like, anytime prior I'd have an ovarian cyst rupture, I would never go to the ER because they don't do anything for you. It's a waste of time, $300 every time I go. Yeah, they give you pain meds, sure, but it's just like, yeah, sorry for being a woman. There's nothing we can do. You just have to wait for it to either like continue to release all this shit into your abdomen, so it'll shrink, or and if it doesn't, you need to follow up with your gynecologist. Anyways, I would never go prior. I would just ride it out. But I ended up going this time because I was nervous again because I'm like, is it the right kidney that's in apartment 1A or is it the right ovary that's in apartment 2B? I don't know. They're so close together and the square footage is so small. You don't know which kitchen's burning. So I ended up going to the ER. My pain's getting worse. Like my low back is just like, ah, oh, like just absolutely clenching for life. Will not release. They gave me some muscle relaxers there, did nothing. Gave me pain meds, that basically did nothing either. But all my blood work back, bleh, blah, blah, blah. My urinalysis came back wonderful, negative on everything. Everything was green. Like the creme de la creme was that my kidney numbers were the best they've ever been. Like smack dab in the middle, green all the way down. GFR was 106. I think the highest I've ever been is 110. And I was like, okay, this is awesome. It's not my kidney. So they do the CT. They're like, they were thinking it was appendicitis. They were like, this sounds like appendicitis. We might have to do surgery tonight. And I'm like, oh my God. So ended up not being anything. So I go to, I message my gynecologist, Dr. Muldoon, who I love and will always say that. She saved my life. And I said, hey, listen, like I was in the ER, I wanted to ask you about this. A, do you mind getting your eyes on that CT just to see, from a gynecologist perspective? I've learned to not trust radiologists. I think most of us in this space have learned to not trust them. So our skepticism is warranted. So she went and looked at it. She said, hey, your ovary looks fine. I don't see any free-flowing fluid, this whole thing, blah, blah, blah. My white blood cell count was a little bit high when I was there. And I said, well, my question is this. I had stage four endometriosis. I was diagnosed with this prior to knowing I had Nutcracker. Dr. Muldoon did the excision of stage four endo at the same time as my hysterectomy and my left oophorectomy, which is the loss of my left ovary. And that was 2 years ago. Like almost November 1st will be a 2 year anniversary. And as the recording date of this, it's October 26, 2025. So I said, hey, what are the odds that this could be the endo being back? and causing a ruckus because it was around the time of my cycle too. Like I looked 6 months pregnant, the whole thing, bloated, pain, all of it. And she was like, well, the research does show that it can come back within 2 years. Because especially like I believe she said something along the lines, and don't quote me on this, but like depending on the stage you had, it's like the occurrence could come back more quickly. She said, but like the research shows that if you just do excision, no hysterectomy, it can come back within 2 years. So you can get pain relief for up to 2 years. If you do an excision with a hysterectomy, it's anywhere from 2 to 5 years. And I was like, okay, well, I have a hernia surgery. So tomorrow, Monday, October 27th at 8 a.m., I have a hernia repair surgery. So I did have a hernia that was created from the open abdominal excision. It was nothing that UW Health did wrong at all. It's just my body popped a hernia, baby. And it's located like in the upper part of the incision, so above my belly button, below my sternum. And it is getting bigger. So we're going to go in and repair that with the transplant team here in Denver, not Dr. Peshack. So not the Nutcracker surgeon. It's Dr. Cooler, that's at Advent Health Porter in Denver. He's going to repair that. And I asked Dr. Muldoon, I said, listen, this is my seventh surgery in 2 years. All I asked, I said, can you ask Dr. Cooler? Because I know she knows the transplant team. I was like, can you ask them to take some photos down there and send them to you to see if some endo has reoccurred? And if it has, then it would warrant an eighth surgery. But I also told her, I was like, my body has been through so much with like anesthesia, pain meds, medical trauma, being in hospitals, the whole nine yards. This hernia surgery is also going to be inpatient because of the amount of surgeries I've had. And they're really worried because my intestines have been poked so much that they might just shut down on me. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Good energy there. And she actually got back to me and she said, listen, I'm going to see if I can call and see if I can be in on the surgery. And it worked out that she can, which is amazing. Again, snaps, kudos to this woman. So that's a little bit of an update on where I'm at. I'm heading into, I did have another prior surgery. So I'm again, auto transplant was December 19, 2024. My out-of-pocket max and deductible was met by April of 2025, baby. Okay. So like we hopefully some of you all out there know the pros and cons of that. It's like this weird, like, oh my God, yay, I don't have to pay for anything when really you're like just went into medical debt. And it's like this false sense of like universal healthcare because they're like, oh, it's $0. You don't have to pay for anything. So I ended up deciding because I'm in so much medical debt that I did end up having a septoplasty and turbinate reduction July 31st of 2025. So a couple months ago, turned out I was thinking I had like crazy allergies. I went to an allergist and they were like, baby, this is structural. You have a pretty bad deviated septum. So they went in and did all that. That was probably the second most painful surgery next to my hysterectomy. Not even my transplant surgery was not even this painful, to be quite honest with you. That epidural they gave me was chef's kiss. So I did that knowing, like, listen, my out-of-pocket max, my deductible's met. So this whole episode I'm going to talk to you all about is about insurance. Okay. It's the thing we hate. We all like, I've never met somebody that, like, if you are listening to this and you say you love insurance, I'm willing to have a conversation. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to hear what you love about insurance. You know, I guess if I could like argue, like I love insurance that it's there to help pay, right? That we don't live in a society that's just like if you have medical problems, you have to pay fully out of pocket. So like that's a silver lining. I don't know. I'm really stretching here. I'm really reaching. But if anybody out there is like, oh, let me tell you why I love it. I would really truly love to hear it and have like an objective conversation. Help me to not be so hateful toward insurance. And if you are a part of Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield that has anything to do with my claims and pre-authorizations, I love you. I love insurance. I will say I do Blue Cross Blue Shield, and this is no joke. I'm not shitting here. I do, they have been very good to me in a lot of ways. I have had a couple things denied, but for the most, one of the things they denied, it turned out I really didn't need. Another thing they denied is like, we're still trying to fight it. But in most regard, they have truly like not given me much of a headache. The headache that I'm dealing with is more on the facility side of things. So what I'm going to do is, I want to talk. This is raw. This is real. This is on a Sunday. I'm recording this on a Sunday. My surgery is tomorrow on Monday. I just hope maybe you listening to my lived experience and listening to me bitch about this is you just like snapping and being like, yes, I'm not alone. And I do think that there's power in knowing that there's other people that are just as stressed about insurance, just as traumatized by insurance. And in reality, actually, the story I'm about to share has nothing, it really isn't even insurance. It's on the facility side of things that they didn't do their part in submitting things in a timely manner. So I might show up tomorrow to my surgery and not even be allowed to get my surgery because pre-auth hasn't been approved. So, story time, get your popcorn, okay? Because you're about to just listen to me cope with this by me spewing this whole story on you. As we all know, if you're in the Nutcracker space, you've been under anesthesia multiple times. There's no way that, like, your first surgery is the auto transplant. And if it is, message me because holy shit, how did that happen? Like, that feels like a 2050, like, the year 2050, maybe year 20, like, 21, like 2100. I don't know that that would happen. So I have learned, as most of you listening, that every hospital facility financial department deals with pre-authorizations differently. Now, I was like 31 years old when I even learned what a pre-auth was, okay? Because they don't teach us about this in school. They teach us about American history that's not even true or doesn't represent all of American history, but they don't teach us about taxes. They don't teach us about health insurance, right? And I think there's a reason for that. I digress. These are my personal views. This is my podcast, okay? So don't come at me. With that being said, I have learned in the 7 surgeries in 2 years, I always call, I always follow up, I'm always kind. I always learn the name of the person that I'm speaking to. I want to give out to a shout out to Rita at Dr. Muldoon's office, who's the office administrator there. Holy moly, is she amazing. From the moment I spoke with her on the phone, she's so caring. She goes the extra mile. And for the most part, I feel that way. Like Marcy at UC Health snaps. Rachel, that's now there, that does the post-op stuff, snaps. I'm even going to give a shout out to Liz in the financial department with AdventHealth Port of their transplant center, snaps, even though some of this story that I'm about to share is a little bit of a frustration with that department. But I do think she's been kind to me on the phone. The way she's been handling it is wonderful. So I've always learned to approach, like, don't just sit idly and think that these people are going to get things done in a timely manner. That doesn't mean they're not doing their jobs. They have a lot on their plate. They're fighting insurance. There's other cases that they're dealing with. So I really want to make sure that I emphasize cloaking yourself in empathy before you go into these phone calls, before you walk into that office. Because I remember there was a, I think it was a Chick-fil-A. I mean, politically, let's call it something else. But like where they have somebody walking into the establishment and they have these thought bubbles there, and it's basically insinuating that like we don't actually know what somebody's going through, so make sure you're being kind at all times. And so that's how I kind of approach this. It's like I don't know what's going on in Marcy's life behind the scenes, right? Like I have no idea. Her life might be great, it might not be. And so I don't want to add to the not be section of somebody's life. That doesn't mean that I can't have valid frustration towards it, but I am responsible for how I communicate that frustration. And so that's something I really want to, like, before we get into this, cloak ourselves in the superpower of being as empathetic as we can while also holding space for our frustration. And we can do that in a poised manner. We can do it in a professional manner, okay? So, I'm about to share story time, get your popcorn. This story that I'm so frustrated about, and I've lost so much sleep this weekend, and I might even just start crying right now. Man, I feel like I'm on the verge. I'm having the surgery tomorrow, Monday, October 27th at 8:30 a.m. This surgery, my initial consult was July 16th of 2025 at 11 a.m. Mountain Time. The surgery was scheduled mid-August. There has been time to get this pre-auth sent in and get it approved. But I know in my experience that when I always call and say, hey, can you forward me to the financial person like on these cases, so that I've learned like the hard way, as we all probably have, to just call, check in. Hey, I want to introduce myself. My name's Simone. I wanted to see, I know that every hospital, every department like runs differently. Like, is there anything that you need from me? I'm curious, like questions I'll ask that. Like, is there anything you need from me? I just kind of want to establish a relationship with you. Secondly, what is the timeline on you submitting pre-authorization so I can just like be able to wrap my head around it from like an, anxiety, like stress and anxiety standpoint? When in your time doing this job, like what's the turnaround time that you see? Like, do you submit it and it's usually a week? Like, what are obstacles you've run into that maybe we can try to like mitigate some of those obstacles preemptively, things like that. So I would always call and ask for the financial person to just say, like, I'm trying to create a working relationship with you, because A, I care. Like, I want to humanize the people I'm working with, because I want to humanize everybody. And like politically, that's my stance. Like humanistically, that's my stance. So I did this with this surgery about 3 weeks ago. I called and I said, hey, can I please speak to the person that is financially, like does all the financial stuff for these surgeries? And they transferred me to Liz, and Liz was wonderful. I just said, hey, I just want to, same thing I just said, create a working relationship with you. I know I want to respect the fact that every hospital and department is different. When do you submit pre-auths? Anything you need from me, just kind of that stuff. And it was a great combo. We got off the phone and I was just like, oh my gosh, Liz is amazing. They have an awesome person in that position. Well, then life got crazy. Again, like I said, 2 weeks ago, I was in the ER. Actually, 3 weeks ago now. Then the following week, I had my national conference in Montreal, Canada, for sports psychology, which was amazing. But it was also that was also stressful. It was my first time going in 5 years that I was allowed to go because medically I could. And but it was also international travel. My partner came with me, and Air Canada canceled our flights like 5 times. I was supposed to get all this grading done. I didn't because I had to be on the phone with customer service, and that we all know what that feels like, being on the phone with customer service. So it was stressful. Then on the flight home, our flights kept getting canceled again. It was a 24-hour flying day. We didn't get home till 4 a.m. Monday morning. Monday, that's of this week. So this past Monday was scrapped. My brain cells were like not firing. I was half a human. So I had 2 weeks worth of grading I needed to get done in 6 days before I go under anesthesia for this inpatient surgery coming up tomorrow. So I had completely dropped the ball, because something else I like to do, and I really want to encourage you all to do, is I always like to just follow up, a very friendly follow up, not like, hey, I'm here, did you do your job? But just forgot to call Liz. And I also forgot to put this on my to-do list. I write everything down, I make reminders, the whole thing. I had mentally noted to call her that, because she told me that they submit pre-auths a week prior. So I was like, okay, that means my surgery's on October 27th. That means that they are going to submit the pre-auth on October 20th. So I mentally was like, make sure you go, because I remember I was like in my car talking to her. I was like, make sure you go to your calendar and put a to-do list to call her on October 21st, that Tuesday, just to follow up and ask things like, hey, I just want to see, like you told me you all would submit the pre-auth yesterday. I just wanted to follow up and see if there was any issues with that. Can you give me the utility management number as well, which is the reference number for Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield? Can you also give me the timestamps of when you submitted? I just kind of like to have it for my records. Again, I tried to approach it as very like, cloaked in empathy, just like I'm trying to do my diligence as a patient, and this is a working relationship you and I have. And I forgot to do that. I was working 12-hour days this past week, just trying to get these papers graded, make sure students are situated prior to me being out of office. Thursday at 4:45 rolls around, and the thought, I was like, I completely forgot to call. And I thought, you know what? Let me go to the insurance page and see. It's probably been submitted. They've probably done their job. Nothing had been submitted. I saw nothing on there. They've received nothing. Nothing had been like in process or pending, nothing. So again, at that point, it's 5 p.m. on a Thursday. Nobody answers, but I make a note to call back on Monday, Friday morning, which was 2 days ago, at 8 a.m. I leave Liz a voicemail. Hey, Liz. And I was really honest, again, cloaked in empathy. I just wanted to follow up on my end of things on insurance. It's not showing anything's been submitted. That doesn't mean it hasn't been submitted. Just trying to give a bit of an out there. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, because there's a lot of things in this in this process I don't know about, right? Like, I don't know Liz's jobs. I don't know the ins and outs of what that system looks like. I don't know the ins and outs of like what it's like when Blue Cross Blue Shield receives it and then notes it on. So I don't want to just accuse and say it hasn't been submitted. You dropped the ball. So I was just like, hey, on my end of things, it's showing it's not been submitted. Doesn't mean it hasn't. Just to be honest with you, I'm just a smidge anxious. I remember saying that. I was like, so I wanted to call and kind of see where it was at. Hope you can alleviate my anxiety going into this weekend. That proceeded to be like multiple phone calls that day with Liz. There was a little bit of miscommunication because Dr. Muldoon is now going to be on the case. They were not aware of that. I got a call back at 3 p.m. from Liz saying like, hey, I talked to insurance. We submitted the pre-auth as urgent. And my assumption, again, I didn't do my due diligence because my brain is all over the place. I also can't be on my ADD medication this week because you can't be on stimulants prior to surgery. So I'm not like, I'm very ADD this week. Let's be real. I wish I would have asked when the original timestamp was sent for the first pre-auth that was supposedly sent. And I'm putting supposedly, like, again, I don't want to be accusatory because from my position, my POV, I have no idea. I don't want to accuse anything of anybody of anything. Wow. I don't want to accuse anything of anybody. And I wish I would have just asked that, like, from a formality standpoint, not an accusatory standpoint, but just like, hey, do you mind for like my records? If you're like, when did you submit the first time? Like, when was the timestamp of the first submission? And what was the UM reference number for that? Is this a completely different UM reference number that's being submitted? And if so, when is the timestamp for that? Because my understanding when talking to Liz Friday at 3 p.m. Mountain Time, and remember, I mean, something else to keep in mind is your insurance might not actually be in the time zone that you live in. We're in Mountain Time. That was 3 p.m. Mountain Time. Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield is in Eastern. So this 3 p.m. phone call, Anthem was already closed. So I couldn't call them to be like chat with them on my end of things to like confirm, see what was going on. So I've been in the dark all weekend. And Liz said, we just submitted an urgent pre-authorization. That gives them 72 hours. And I wish again, I would have asked, does that mean 72 hours business days? Because I keep checking my Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, which let's go to it now. And maybe, I don't know, maybe y'all are going to get to experience the celebration of them telling me this isn't pending anymore, but I doubt that. My understanding is they don't work over the weekend. So I'm going to waltz up in to this surgery, not having a pre-auth for this. Let's see here. Authorizations. Not having this pre-auth approved. Come on. Oh man, it says pending. Not having this pre-authorization approved. So on the phone with Liz on Friday, Liz, very calm. She was like, yeah, I've been calling everything. We have it submitted. In all my time doing this, I've never seen anything like this get denied. So just, show up to your surgery on Monday. So she seems chill. Great. Melissa, the transplant coordinator, calls. She also seems chill. See you on Monday at 5:30 in the morning. Like, cool. I'm chilling. I'm cooking dinner and I get another phone call from healthcare. So I answer it. And it is a person with the hospital as a whole, not the transplant center. And boy, did he come at me with an anxious tone. And boy, did that interact with my high state and trait anxiety already, especially my medical trauma. And he goes, is this blah, blah, blah. And like, I see here, it was like 7 o'clock on a Friday night. He was like, I see here you have your surgery on Monday and this isn't pre-authorized. And you like, I don't know why anybody hasn't called you yet. Like just very anxious, very like freaked, like almost like he was gonna be held responsible. He's just speaking a mile a minute. And I was like, sir, I was like, I spoke with Liz today. This is what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. And he goes, well, just so you know, you're gonna have to sign a form like waiving our right to have to pay for anything, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what? Like, I'm financially responsible. Again, I'm not on my ADD medication. I have high state anxiety. I was diagnosed with CPTSD a long time ago. I have very high medical anxiety. So that phone call sent me into a little bit of what I would like to call a tizzy. Whew. I'm not thinking, actually. Thankfully, today, I sent out an SOS on social media and was like, can anybody help me with this situation? Like, what am I supposed to do? I'm not signing that form at all because this is not my fault, right? Like I did my due diligence as a patient. I shouldn't have to micromanage these individuals. It sounds like, again, this isn't necessarily Liz's fault. It sounds like there's some larger like macro level miscommunication going on. Which is fair. There was like kind of some last minute changes to the surgery. So again, cloak ourselves in empathy. Like I'm just trying to be like, there's a lot I don't know. If there's one thing getting a PhD taught me, it is that there's a lot of shit I don't know. I know a lot about a little thing, but there's a lot more out there I don't know. And that's what makes it stressful because you wish you knew, you wish you had the power of knowledge and you were educated on these things so you could know how to advocate for yourself. And that's a lot of why this is frustrating. So I'm standing in the same space with you, standing next to you, saying, I get it, I'm frustrated with you. So finally today I sent out an SOS, a little, Batwoman beacon of like, what do I do? I'm not signing this form, but I need to have this surgery. There's a lot of puzzle pieces at play. Somebody reached out to me and I didn't even think about this. So circling back around to the beginning of this episode, my out-of-pocket max is yeah. My deductible and out-of-pocket max was met in April of this year. So yippee-ki-yay. And so because of that, this likely isn't actually going to affect me financially. However, I'm not necessarily going to waltz in there and be like, oh, psh, this isn't going to, like, I'm going in protected, right? Like, I'm protecting myself no matter what because, again, I don't know the system. I don't actually know. I had one person today, I think it was on Facebook, they reached out and they were like, if your deductible and out-of-pocket max is met, you are good. You don't need to worry. You can waltz in tomorrow. You're okay. That has lessened my anxiety because I want to, in my undergrad and master's degree, one of the theories that I was kind of obsessed with, because again, I have high stage train anxiety, hello, was something called uncertainty reduction theory. And it's like a 1990 publication. Since then, it's been updated to uncertainty management theory as of 2001. I actually wrote a paper in, I think, 2015. Arguing that it should be changed to uncertainty acceptance theory, because we should learn how to have a better, more just a better relationship with uncertainty, because it's not a bad emotion. It's one that we need to learn to live with in a more copacetic way. So I digress, got a little nerdy there. But because of my education and understanding uncertainty reduction theory, basically what this theory says, little bit of a lecture. Uncertainty is uncomfortable. We all know that. And we seek to reduce it. So, uncertainty reduction theory. And URT has seven different tenets on how to reduce uncertainty. But the number one, and I'm not going to go into all seven, the number one tenet to help reduce uncertainty is to gather data. Okay. So, that's why everything I've said to you here has been couched within, like, I always call. I always create working relationships with people. I probably do more than most patients do. I follow up. I send, like, after an appointment, like with my transplant with Marcy, like if I would have an appointment with like my labs, I'd be like, send her a message. Hey, I'm sure that you could get your hands on these labs in some little weird wizardy way program y'all have, but I'm also going to download them and send them to a message for you because I don't want to assume anything because I don't know, right? Like, so I would always gather data, and gather data is like, again, asking questions, sharing information, just so you know it's there. But the issue that I'm dealing with now is I don't have a lot of power to reduce my uncertainty because Anthem's closed. I can't call Liz. She's at home, hopefully relaxing, right? Hopefully enjoying time with family. Hopefully, I don't know, doing a hike, something great for mental health. Maybe there's a party going on. Like, I really, truly hope that for her. She's not thinking about me. She has no idea I'm sitting here freaking out about tomorrow. And I don't fault her for that, right? Like Friday, she really did. She called me multiple times. She was very, I said, thank you for like answering my anxiety-induced phone calls, right? Like I was trying to make a joke of it, and she really did work with me and she was being really great. So again, cloaked in empathy of now I've have information today of like, okay, my out-of-pocket max, my deductible's met, but it's still causing me anxiety because I don't actually fully know the system. And as I, when you are like us, nutcracker patients who have been gaslit and gaslit and gaslit for years and years and years, I am so anxious that there's some little thing in small writing somewhere that I didn't read in a 572-page packet that says, even if your deductible and out-of-pocket max is met, if pre-authorization isn't approved, your deductible and out-of-pocket max is null and void, right? Like, that's what I'm nervous about. And I just want to validate, maybe some of y'all out there are nodding your head. I hope, or maybe it's just me. If it's just me, that's fine. My experience in and of itself is valid. But maybe some of y'all can also understand that. So instead of, I've decided to just record, just I thought the only way I know to cope with this is to record an episode for you all. Raw, real, but also like in a way that's like really hopefully educational for you all. So one of the things I have done is, and I've also learned this, I have had to write multiple grievance letters, but usually it's because it's like, so something, at least for my insurance, just to let y'all know, I have Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield PPO. I do think those are different per state. I'm not 100% sure. That's something else I don't know. Again, I know there's so much I don't know. And I also don't have time to read the 572-page packet back to back. And chastise me if you want, whatever. I've had to write many grievance letters. What I've learned from my insurance is you have 180 days from the procedure to write a grievance. And if you don't write that grievance letter, there's nothing you can do after the fact. So I have, and what sucks is oftentimes you don't find out there's an issue until after you've done the surgery, you're doped up on pain meds, you don't feel great, and you're having to navigate an insurance issue. So, yay, I'm on morphine, I'm on Percocet, I'm on Dilaudid, and you want me to navigate this insurance? And I do truly feel like insurance will do stuff like that. Maybe not like fully intentionally, but to some degree, they know you're sick, they know you don't feel good, and they're hoping that you just won't check your emails because you're recovering. I could go on a whole nother episode about that. That is a whole nother thing that I have bitched about in many of group text messages with other Nutcracker people. What I'm doing, and something that I hope maybe can maybe give you all some ideas. First things first, I was told on Friday by this guy that called from this hospital saying, you're gonna have to sign a waiver, you're gonna have to sign this financial release waiver, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I'm not signing anything. This isn't my fault. So I am gonna go in. I'm writing a patient addendum to the financial responsibility form. I'm pre-writing this. I'm gonna print it out. I'm taking it in with me. I'm taking multiple copies in with me. I have like two, attention, pre-authorization billing department, the address of the hospital. I have my name, date of birth, scheduled procedure date, the surgeons and providers. I write my name. I'm submitting this addendum in connection with the financial responsibility form presented to me on and about the date of my scheduled procedure. My procedure has been scheduled since mid-August 2025, following my initial consultation on July 16, 2025. I've met all patient responsibilities related to scheduling, communication, and insurance covers in good faith. I am present and ready to proceed with the surgery at the original scheduled date and time. I am signing this form only to acknowledge receipt and discussion. I do not agree to assume or financial responsibility for any denial of insurance coverage, payment, or reimbursement that results from this facility or provider's failure to obtain timely pre-authorization or insurance approval. This addendum serves to confirm that I have not contributed to any delay. I have acted in full compliance with all patient and insurance obligations, and any failure to secure pre-authorization rests solely on the facility and its administrative agents. So I am going to take this with me. I'm also taking a stapler and I'm going to staple this to the financial responsibility form they want me to sign. I'm going to sign this, and on the paper they give me for financial responsibility, I'm not signing that, and I'm only going to write signed the patient addendum on the next page. This form will not be signed as it was coerced under duress. So I'm taking that with me. I'm also already writing a grievance letter in the event that it needs to be signed. And I have my name, my member ID. This is going to insurance, okay? Because I want to allow myself space to just heal and not worry about this shit. And so that's what I hope to, if you all run into anything and you don't have that pre-auth, again, right, some of y'all might be like, girl, your deductible and out-of-pocket max is met. Like, chill out. They're not going to charge you anything. Again, I don't know. And I want to allow my recovering self enough space to be able to just rest and not worry about that. I just want to focus on recovery. And so I wrote a whole letter to insurance saying I'm writing to formally file an agreement, a grievance concerning the failure of the above facility to not obtain timely pre-authorization. And I remember a couple years back speaking to an insurance agent, and they said, when you write your grievance, make sure that you explicitly state that you will not be in charge of any payments. Like, don't do the whole like, I request that I not be reliable. Don't write that passive language. Say, I will not pay anything pertaining to this based on the facility and provider's failure to obtain timely pre-authorization. So, what I'm hoping is that my story helps you to A, just feel validated. I know my story is not like, oh, listen to what happened to me. Nobody else deals with this. No, this happens to everybody. I'm not recording this to blame. Like, I'm not mad. Like, I am frustrated to an extent with, again, the pre-authorization communicate. There's a miscommunication somewhere, and whoever's responsible for that, I am frustrated with that, and I am valid in being frustrated with that, and I apologies really don't ever accomplish anything. You're always like, oh, if they'll apologize, I'll feel better. No, it happened. I'm frustrated. I've been losing sleep over it. I just want this to be over. When we're in that situation, though, all we can do is held accountable to how we take action and how we are productive. So yes, wallow in your emotions, but don't let those emotions take the best of you to where you're not actually being productive. So I decided today, okay, Simone, what can we do to be as prepared as possible so that we can alleviate as much stress as possible? And that's when I decided I was going to go ahead and write the patient addendum to the financial responsibility form. And then I was actually speaking with another Nutcracker patient on the phone. We were both bitching about the same stuff. And I was like, you know what? The idea came up about go ahead and proactively write the grievance letter to insurance. And I can go in and like write more specifics later because, again, I have 180 days to submit it. But that way, it's like future Simone that's debilitated, like in bed, doesn't want to do anything on pain meds, and all I want to do is read my Kindle or watch The Gilded Age on HBO. Like, I give myself permission to do that, and it's not going to be me trying to write a grievance letter while I'm on all that. So, insurance woes are real. I also want to acknowledge this. There's a lot of multicultural aspects to this. Like, I have a full-time job that I have insurance through. Some of you do not. Some have like your private pay for insurance. I could go into a whole nother episode about how those premiums are outrageous. My partner is, he is a sole, he has an LLC. So like health insurance has to come out of his pocket. Medicaid, we can even talk about the stress of just like the HR1 bill that has come through and how that's going to make impacts to the medical system and the stress that comes from that. So there's all, I think I've spoken about on this podcast before. I teach a psychology of injury and rehabilitation course for many practitioners, medical practitioners, sports psychologists, mental performance consultants, therapists, mental health therapists. And there's two main models that we work out of. One is a stress injury model. And think of it this way: the stress injury model has three different kind of buckets to fill, and one of them is personality. You've heard me talk about it. Personality is like, what is the client? Or think about yourself. Think about your own personality. Do you have high state and trait anxiety? And state anxiety is like, a anxiety that comes with a specific situation. So, do you just have anxiety around medical stuff, but you're a pretty non-anxious person otherwise? Trait anxiety, which generationally my family has, is like, are you genetically predisposed to this? Do you already have a higher than normal anxious tendency? And then being put in more stressful situations, such as like state anxiety, that then revs it up. What are you, perfectionism, ADD, ADHD, whether you're medicated or not. When we work with athletes, we do like an athlete identity measurement scale. So just think about like your personality, history of stressors, right? Like prior injuries, any other major life events going on right now, daily hassles that you have to deal with. So of course, Nutcracker patients, prior injuries, hello, that's also prior surgeries, other anesthetics that we've been under, just traumas from having to deal with insurance for however many years we've been having to deal with them. Any major life events, right? Like, are you trying to secure another job right now? Are you going through the interview process? Is a divorce happening in your family? How's your relationship with your significant other, your siblings? The list goes on. Daily hassles, right? Like, what's your daily routine like? Like, right now, I have a lot of daily hassles. I'm so behind on grading. Thankfully, I have a couple papers I need to grade today, and I should be pretty good. I am procrastinating. My ADD brain is why I'm sitting here procrastinating and grading is recording this episode. And then the last one is coping resources. What coping resources do you have to deal with this? So have you been in mental health therapy and learned some tools on how to navigate these stressful processes? What's your social support like? What else is there? So your self-care routine. So a lot of times I notice that like I have better self-care when I feel better than when I don't. And so there's things like that that are all interacting. And then to me, insurance just shits on all of those. So, I just feel like, I have high state train anxiety, ADD, all this stuff, and that's interacting with my stress with insurance. I have my history of stressors that are already making me anxious, because I've had so many surgeries, and that's interacting with this insurance bullshit. And then I have a wealth of coping resources. I've been in mental health therapy for decades at this point. I'm also a sports psychology professor, and just through my education, I have a lot of tools in my toolbox. And this isn't, I don't want you to think like, oh my gosh, well, if she has so many tools and I don't, then like, I'm just gonna crumble. This is me validating to you on how much insurance shits on all of this. Like, I can go be as mindful as possible, and I have been doing that, and it has been helping. So I would encourage you this. Insurance shits on everything. I would encourage you to go back and listen to the episodes on like mental, kind of the mental game tidbits that I offer to you all. And when you're dealing with insurance, bring those in. Bring the whole armory of coping skills so that you can try to be as balanced as possible. I'm also hoping that this can be a tool, this podcast itself, and even this episode can be a tool to validate you in your lived experience. So you can be like, oh, okay, it's not just me. I do think that kind of vicarious living experiences really do help me to be like, okay, they're not just attacking me, they hate everybody. So, not necessarily the facility and stuff. Again, cloak of empathy. And I want to make one more point. This is the cloak of empathy is obviously you interacting with other person, but empathizing with yourself too, that goes both ways. I am stressed, obviously. Like nothing I hate more than people being like, don't be stressed, don't think about it. Leave me alone, right? That's the most invalidating thing you can say to me right now. Like, how am I not going to be stressed and thinking about it when I'm about to be put under anesthesia tomorrow for a pretty long surgery? And then be inpatient for it. Like, there's no way. It's all consuming. It's all consuming. It's very stress invoking. So what I want to do as I end most of these episodes, at least when they're solo episodes by me, is let's all just take a deep breath. We all know that I need it. And if you need it now, just deep inhale through your nose. Maybe hold it for a second at the top. Slower exhale through your mouth, or if you're more comfortable, through your nose. Another deep inhale through your nose, filling your full lungs, feeling your rib cage expand, your chest rise, holding it there for a second, maybe. Slowly exhale, continuing with that pattern, maybe for the next few moments, even as you transition into your day after this episode. Full deep inhale at your own pace, whatever feels more comfortable for you. Slow exhale. I want to send gratitude to you for listening to this podcast, for listening to this episode. I want to send gratitude for me, and I want you to do the same for yourself. I want you to take a second as you breathe in. You're breathing in gratitude for self, for all of the advocacy work you've done for yourself on this journey. Breathe out that gratitude into the world, the gratitude for self, the gratitude for others. I wish you well. I wish you the best. I wish you the most empathy and the most love. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be free from suffering. Thank you for listening.